Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Mark Googe, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense's Military Health System. So, Mark, you've done a wonderful job of explaining the global span and reach of the military health system and the importance of getting information and health services anywhere, anytime. I'd like to understand what the technology innovation strategy that underlies actually meeting such a mission. Could you tell us a little bit about the principles?
Sure. So really my three big principles about how we look at innovation, how we look at really technologies within the portfolios is, again, the clinical relevance, the technical feasibility, and the financial viability of that solution. And I think if those three things come together, not only do you have a way to harness innovation at the lowest level from the deck plates all the way through, and you have a framework in which to do that, all right? So there's got to be some innovation compliance framework and standards that people can shoot to a target, that when I look at those clinical, technical, and financial viabilities that helps us weigh decisions and where we're going for the MHS, allows me to really orchestrate a better framework through governance and boards to allow people to be successful. Right. So if I know what I need to do to achieve where I want to be through checklists and templates and and artifacts to drive innovation and or change management into the portfolio, that's the kind of things we're doing through our architectural governance board, through our engineering control board, and through our portfolio board to allow those innovations to come up in a streamlined manner that meets what we need to do from an HIT or a central transformation of portfolio.
So given the MHS carries on multiple and complex missions, its information technology requirements and portfolio reflect that complexity. And you're really the visionary, if you will, or the outward-facing technologist. Would you elaborate on your efforts to foster that enterprise view?
Sure. So not only internally with really a lot of the CMIOs or the CIOs, that's really the makeup of a lot of mine and some of the other business units that really drive the direct clinical, to have them come together in our governance boards, our HIT, our innovation boards, to allow those things to really be put on the table so we can look at what is strategically our objectives and how do we codify those into evidence-based decisions that allows us to put the palming on there, or the planning, right, for the financial out years or this year. And really, how could we reverse engineer those things to meet, right, where we want to be to create that puzzle piece that fits into that large city planning picture. And so we don't repeat that, right, so that we ensure that it's unique, it's necessary, and we can apply the proper really segments or strengths onto that puzzle piece to allow it to be put into the portfolio. That's internally. Externally, we work with a lot of external areas. I know we do stuff with Gartner, with Forrester, looking at reports, with our HEMS chapters, really garnering some of the health IT and innovations out there. The PCAST report from the President's Council, the 25 points, we did a lot of interaction there just at Georgetown or George Washington here last year about how we, the MHS, responded to the PCAST report, and we look at, you know, semantic data interoperability, right? So that's a big challenge across the nation, is data and data conformance and standards, to look at when we do the mission that we do, a lot of our care is done out on town. And so if we don't have a good meta model in which we exchange information, and the lexicon becomes very important, right? So ASA equals aspirin, or does it, right? So if you don't have a universal translator there, that's going to be very challenging, right, and very time-consuming to ensure, again, the proper care was delivered to our patients and those entrusted to our care. Then we can consume that information back to us as the enterprise to take on if we need to do more extended care to our patients internally as well.
So how does all these efforts lead to a one connected enterprise? Can you give us a sense of how does all this come
Sure. I think through the governance, right, you start putting between the strategic planning, you put a framework about what the city's going to look like. Mm-hmm. Then you put the players and actors and episodes inside that to allow us to, again, I don't have to be a doctor to understand this is a requirement that needs to be fulfilled, right? Or though I don't need to be a gas worker to understand that I have to lay some gas lines here. So don't put the pavement down until we put the gas lines in and all the infrastructure necessary to allow that foundation to happen so we can build on to that. And so that's really kind of the bigger sequencing. And that goes back to, again, visualizing through the enterprise architecture, and through long-range planning from our requirements or our IMs groups, our information managers, those things we need to tackle. And from our strategic planning initiatives from our senior leaders, what is necessary in which to meet the strategic goals and objectives.
And I'd like to delve into the enterprise governance aspect, and it's critical to the success of your efforts, and you've highlighted that. I want to talk about what you've done to enhance MHS's technology governance process, and more particularly, how does a strong governance model enable you to optimize resources?
Sure. So when we look at governance and what we do, we look at the technical tenets and foundations and standards that were necessary. It really provides a kind of a quantitative framework in which to say acceptable, unacceptable, right? Mm-hmm. Have already, don't have. So that we look at, again, ensuring that we're not duplicating efforts and activities, that we're complying with our not only internal directives and policies, but those of the larger Department of Defense. So we have alignment. Wherever we go operationally, we have alignment and we have standardization of our products and services as we fill those to our tri-service partners. So really, without that governance framework and without those standards and that interoperability, it's kind of hard to have uniformity on that. And so again, through a lot of our compliance boards, we want to ensure that we're successful, we have speed to market, we have interoperability, and we have a standardized approach in which we do things. So pull down a build sheet. Here's a build sheet. Here's a requirement. These things are acceptable. The other things are not acceptable, or they might be waiverable. But we have mechanisms in which to do that more succinctly than we did before. And so it brings a lot of the pieces that were kind of fragmented now together in a very holistic manner so that, again, my one board A and B and C do not operate independently, but together, and they provide the relevance from each of their specialized knowledge areas to help initiate a transformation or satisfy a requirement that we have.
So from governance and the importance of governance to shaping a new architecture, systems architecture, I'd like to transition to that. And you've mentioned long-range architecture, LRA, for the enterprise. Would you tell us a little bit more about your efforts in this area? And more particularly, how does it seek the LRA to enable rapid, secure delivery and lifecycle support for IT?
So our long-range architecture plan is a culmination of the three services plus our business owners internally to the MHS, TMA, to allow us to look at not only the technologies we have today in the field, measure their relevance to successfully meet the requirements of which they were fielded for, but to look to the evolution of where we're going tomorrow. And so when we look at stuff like mobile technology has been in our long-range architecture planning for the last few years, right? As we see a more mobile or quicker workforce, probably the need is gone to do a lot of heavy lifting in which to put the information or a mechanism to exchange information out to our customers both internally and externally. And I think you see a large shift with that with mobile delivery of content. So now sitting here from our command and control spots, we can hit globally all of our information areas that we need to deploy that capability. So when we look at the transformation of where the data is at, the authoritative sources, what is the mechanism to exchange that data, and how does that data get to said controlled devices to allow us to do that in accordance with our IAE policies and standards. So we derive a lot from really the net-centric approach of where DoD is going, then how we apply that to the MHS space, because when we look across the portfolio, we're the only healthcare delivery organization within the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's a major activity that we have, but again, to ensure that we have speed of delivery, interoperability, we must ensure that we align to the larger Department of Defense when we do that. And same thing when we work with VA. We have a health architecture review board. I co-chair with the VA to ensure what we're doing for the IHR is both meaningful and useful and interoperable with our portfolios, because you have the Department of Veterans Affairs and Department of Defense, and we have to ensure that the things that the IPO will be doing will be interoperable onto our networks and services that our consumers can utilize. And so that's been a very good working relationship with the Interagency Program Office, very forward-leaning, and a huge amount of work they have to do to deliver.
I'd like to go back because you mentioned something, the net-centric approach of DoD. Could you elaborate a little bit on
sure.
that?
So when we look at net-centric approach, again, all about the kind of the data, right? The right data to the right person at the right time. And so when we look at operations and we have a medical component that supplements a warfighter's need, really knowing where those assets are, what kind of assets are available to a combatant commander to make a mission decision is really the framework for some of that net-centric approach. So when we look at the big battle space, when you saw Tora Tora, mm-hmm. right, and they had the board and the admiral was asking for where's all my ships and everything else, it's kind of the same visualization of that, but now in the 21st century, right, with a lot of proliferation of bits and bytes across there, then with a big wrapper about, fit for use, fit for purpose, so we ensure that we have the integrity of the data that's coming from a meaningful source and is protected data so we can accomplish our mission. So that's really the net-centric environment, the culmination of many, many smaller parts of the DoD that equal large data farm for them to make decisions on.
I'd like to transition to your efforts to enhance the military health system's decision support capabilities. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the big things we did was created something called Dynamic Business Capability Mapping Model. So we pulled some of that from some MIT, their health application grid and their framework, and then we put our variables on there to really say what's important for the MHS, right? So each of those variables, right, could change, depends on, the sequencing of the strategies of where we want to go. And to look at our portfolio, not only today of what we have for the transformation we need to do to really start downsizing and start putting things together, but what are those products and services that we use that could be nurtured, that could be reutilized. And so we take a lot of the emotion out of that and really start looking at the applied science from those evidence-based reports to allow us to do our transition as we go forward with the MHS into a service-oriented enterprise, which things should be, right, redone. Identity management is a perfect thing. Was one of our biggest things. I could create identity management 50 times, right, to 50 systems, or I could create it once or consume it from a authoritative source and then apply that to all the verticals and put that horizontal on top to allow, faster evolution, because if I've already signify that it is acceptable both from an IA, from a standards perspective, it plugs the puzzle piece into the larger picture, then there should be no reason why we shouldn't be reutilizing that service over and over again to meet the missions of that unique capability that's been deployed. And so that's really kind of how the evolution is we're going to a more services approached appointments. I've never seen a patient really not check in. So appointment could be a centralized service that we apply to a lot of different departments, cardiology, neurosurgery, right? So that's kind of the business and workflows we do. And that really helps us when we look at that again, not being a healthcare or from that business line, our architectural views for workflows and stuff really help us develop use cases for a patient checks in. He does this or she does that. The next step is X, Y, and Z. It really helps us as a to visualize exactly what is necessary and which to really capture that requirement and translate that to an IT capability that could do that for us.
Yeah, I'd like to continue on this idea. You mentioned service-oriented enterprise, and what is that, and how does it differ from service-oriented architecture? And then, more importantly, what role does the SOE Governance Center play in making your vision a reality?
Sure. So I use SOE or SOA, kind of interoperable,
okay,
right? We really say SOE because it really applies to the whole enterprise we're doing, right? So we have a large transformation across, because if you look at some of how our systems or our data interacts, it's either it's from the business side or it's the direct care side. But either way, there's a push-pull mechanism, right? So why wouldn't we do it on both our direct clinical care and our non-direct clinical care systems and capabilities? Kind of hard to see patients in a surgical manner without having our supplies to be able to do that mission. So everything's really tied together more or less. So that's why we said service-oriented enterprise. Plus, from a fiduciary responsibility, there's no reason to continue with the way we were doing business before when we can create services to allow a lot of these systems to be, again, speed to market and interoperable with the larger enterprise that we are. Our governance center really sets the foundation, because so our service-oriented enterprise or architecture is really first and foremost about the governance of that, right? So if you look at when you create all these services and you have, an enterprise service bus acting as the concierge service to take messages and translate them or send them down or pick them up, that you really need the conductor. Because if not, then you don't know when the woodwinds and right comes in. So you really have to conduct that in a manner that you create harmony within the portfolio of all these services. Because now you're kind of dependent on one another for these services to be up and available for you to continue your mission and your job. And so that's the biggest thing with the SOE Governance Center, that we'll start doing the transformation from the governance to the actual, you know, IT through our test bedding and our dev test environments to allow these things to be what-ifed, to ensure that we're meeting not only performance parameters, the IA parameters, but we're satisfying the requirements as well in a environment that emulates where we're going to be deploying these products and services to. So we call that the sand bedding. So there's a couple few areas of that, but it is an evolution to the end state of where we're going from an architecture standpoint. So it might be light in the front, but as you go and graduate through those areas, it becomes more and more codified to where you're going to deploy that out and how you interact with the other systems. A lot of the times in the past, people delivered products and services, but when we put them out, they didn't play well with each other, right? So this really helps us formulate around and to ensure that we, the DoD, and we, the MHS, are getting our money's worth, that we ensure that the interoperability is present, and that we understand how those things interact with each other. So that's really why we're doing a lot of service-oriented enterprise, not only from a compliance and a reusability, but really from a fiduciary responsibility. As we go more and more light, when I say light, lighter footprints, I don't need a big server farm, I don't need this and that, because again, when I look at platforms as a service, software and infrastructure as a service, you don't have two water companies, yeah, right? Supply your house, you have one. So it really helps standardize on the utility of that organization that we have, our cybersecurity information service that we have, as the owners of a lot of the infrastructure components. So they can ensure through capacity planning, some other checks and balances, that adding 18 more houses on the street is not going to disrupt the 30 houses that are already on that street, right? So we can continue to care and deliver what we need to do to support the mission.
What is MHS doing to cultivate controlled innovation that supports the delivery of healthcare? We will ask Mark Googe, Chief Technology Officer at MHS, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.